Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. On this episode, I have Norman Plotkin on, and we're going to be talking about hypnotherapy. He is a certified hypnotherapist. He also has two books. He's a cancer survivor. We have all kinds of things to talk about. So, Norman, welcome to The Health Fix Podcast.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
So I think the biggest thing, and you address it right away on your website, is what is hypnotherapy and what it isn't? Because I think so many people go right to what we've seen. And depending on your age range, you will tend to kind of go through like something like vaudeville. What is going on? Am I going to be clucking, you know, walking down the street? Am I going to be sleepwalking? What the heck's going to happen? And prior to me trying hypnotherapy, I was kind of a little skeptical too. Like most people are like, I don't know about this. So tell us a little bit first about how you got into hypnotherapy, and then we'll go a little bit more into the details of what exactly is hypnotherapy.
Yeah, sure. So it's been in long, strange trip it's been. I've spent 25 years in politics as a staffer and consultant and then lobbyist. And that was super exciting and interesting, but toxic. And I ended up sick. I had cancer, papillary carcinoma. Interestingly, the throat chakra, right? So I spoke for others. I didn't have my authentic voice and I had cancer in the thyroid. And so at first, I just wanted to get back to normal. And I didn't realize, I didn't understand that normal is what made me sick. And so when I opened my mind, teachers began to appear. I had a friend who gotten out of politics and she opened a yoga studio and I went on a journey of her own. But she took me through therapeutic yoga for cancer, taught me how to meditate, which was really difficult. You know, the super analytical mind served me very well in politics, but not so much when, you know, the walls start moving in on you at around 10 o'clock and there's no one to, you know, give you answers. So learning to meditate was an important first step. And then I just kind of found my way. I feel like I was divinely guided. Wayne Dyer's book, The Power of Intention, was an important first step. And I wanted to put myself into the service of others. And I wasn't quite sure how. Coaching, you know, how do you get right in and without, you know, spending years and years again committed to learning a new modality or whatnot. And so again, I feel like I was divinely guided. I was in the right place at the right time. There's an amazing nationally accredited school in Southern California for hypnotherapy. And I just kind of found my way to it and jumped right in. I had never been hypnotized, but you know, the power of the subconscious mind was front of mind for me as I'd gone through this cancer journey. And so I was open to that, and the school is really good and their story is amazing. And so I was just kind of guided to that, and I never looked back. And so, you know, people ask me, wow, from lobbyist to hypnotherapist, it's kind of a big leap, isn't it? But, you know, it's persuasion of a different sort. It's my avenue to be in service to others, to help them kind of connect dots that they're too close to see and understand little bits of their life that have led them to be trapped into certain behaviors and processes. I mean, what I came to understand was that cancer is a message. If you don't hear the message, you get reassigned. And that's just a polite way of, you know, referring to, you know, not making it through. And so I struggled at first, but then got quiet and still and came to understand the message of my cancer, which was that I was not living my soul's purpose. I was not doing the things that I came here to do. It's a whole nother story, but, you know, we forget, you know, we're made to, we come here and we make deals, our soul, before we manifest here. And then the kind of earth school part of it is that we have to find our way back to it. And sometimes that can be difficult. So I'm blessed. I feel like that I was able to find my soul's purpose. I wanted to call my first book The Unwrapped Gift, but my publisher said, Norm, cancer probably was a gift for you, but how long did it take you to figure that out? And I'm like, yeah, it was a few years. She said, you got to meet people where they are. And when they're in it, they're not thinking it's a gift. So anyway, I've found my way to my soul's purpose, and hypnotherapy is that avenue.
It's a really, you know, it's interesting how our subconscious mind, the more we meditate, the more we start to reflect on things, we will kind of be led toward what it is that we're here for, why, you know, what our deal is. And of course, yes, I believe, you know, as a doc, but also just as a human being, it seems to me the more and more I've been on this earth, it just seems everything kind of wraps around illness, all of that. When you're not serving your purpose, you tend to kind of start to degrade and things fall apart from there. And ultimately, you know, that's kind of what led me to hypnotherapy, because I was creating some serious anxiety in my world. And it was really not things that should have had people anxious. You know, my husband's looking at me going like, that doesn't work me up. What's wrong with you? And when I took a step back, I'm going, okay, yeah, I'm getting worked up about really crazy things. So that being said, working into tapping into the subconscious mind is fascinating to me, but it's also one of those things where a lot of people are like, I don't know about meditation. I don't know if I can do the meditation, but hypnotherapy sounds maybe like it's something that can get me there. So now let's talk a little bit about what hypnotherapy is about and what it's like working with you in particular, because I know that certain people have different techniques, but more or less it's the same thing, getting into that REM state. So tell us a little bit about what it's like to work with you and what hypnotherapy is in your realm.
Yeah. So as you noted, everyone has preconceived notions about hypnosis and hypnotherapy. It was like when I was in politics, everyone had an opinion about politics. And so I would always kind of, you know, dive into to understand their framework for understanding. And so it's just hypnotherapy. Hypnosis is deceptively simple. It's ancient. And in our increasingly technological world, we tend to want an elaborate explanation for things. And so we can mock what we don't understand, and it's the power lies in its simplicity. And if we don't know what's going on behind it, sometimes in the early days, the power of hypnosis was attributed to the mesmerizing personality of the hypnotist, right? And so, but now we have technology that allows us to measure and examine and image the brain and what's going on. And so no longer is it the realm of anecdote, and more likely attributable to the personality of the hypnotist. Now, we understand that when someone is in hypnosis, there's a drop in activity in the dorsal anterior cingulate, part of the salience network of the brain. It's a context decoder. Or in layperson's terms, it's a part of the brain that alerts you to what you should pay attention to and what you can ignore. This part of the brain, which fires up when there's something to worry about, actually calms down during hypnosis. And so a second change is observed in the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain where you plan things and carry out routines, and the insula, a part of the brain that helps regulate body functions. These two parts of the brain begin to sync up in their connectivity in hypnosis, like altering blood pressure and heart rate. This suggests that during hypnosis, the brain intensifies its connection to the body. We can see evidence of this when the hypnotized individual experiences a slower heart rate and a rhythmic breathing cycle with a likely corresponding decrease in blood pressure. So that's what the research is showing, that there's a physiological response in the body to trance. Now, most people's introduction is the county fair or a Vegas stage show or vaudeville or a movie like 1947's Black Magic with Orson Welles. Look into my eyes, you know, and everybody's seen the pocket watch. And, you know, eye fascination is one way in. I don't use eye fascination. And I don't deep sleep, you know, make people fall over out of their chair. Although I have colleagues who I went to school with, they do that. It has its place. It's entertainment. And but it also, you know, creates in the minds of many mystery and apprehension. And so hypnosis is a natural state that we go into every day. You probably have heard of highway hypnosis when you're driving home from work and you end up in the driveway and you don't remember the trip. Or, you know, it can be watching a movie and you're just in it. Like you're in the movie and that's hypnosis. And so it's a familiar feeling. Most of the time people after their first, the first session is always just an introduction because you're going to be guarded. You're going to bring all these preconceived notions. People fear that it's a loss of control. So in my pre-induction speech, I'm always reassuring them that it's not a loss of control. If something made you uncomfortable, you could open your eyes and stop at any moment. You won't, because it's one of the most relaxing experiences you'll ever have, but you could if you needed to. And that's important to understand, because loss of control is the biggest fear of everyone. And so the other preconceived notion is that they're going to blab all the deepest, darkest secrets. And you know, I just reassure them that no, in the cognitive portion, you need to tell me all that, because that's how I'm going to be able to help you. Right. And so, and we have confidentiality. It's, you know, it's a privileged conversation that is carried on. And so it's the information is safe, but it's sifting through the sands of your experience that we find the nuggets that have you know, become kind of chinks in your programming. And from 0 to 8, you're in hypnosis. You're very literal, and you are suggestible, and that's when your programming is being laid down. You mirror and match those in your sphere of influence, and this is, you know, kind of when our operating system gets programmed. And so the conscious mind that we believe is in control of everything, with logic and reason and analysis, willpower and decision-making, we believe that's in control of everything, but that's just the little tip of the iceberg. And the bulk of the iceberg is below the surface, and it's our programming. And so our senses bring in environmental stimulus, and the conscious mind sorts through it. But what it does is it compares it to our programming. And if that information doesn't comport with our programming, we will reject it, or we'll create a rationalization. The easiest example to understand is the smoker. You're not born liking cigarettes, but somewhere along the line, your programming made it okay. Yeah. And you can look at the box of cigarettes, and on the side of it says the Surgeon General warning. The Surgeon General says this is going to kill you. And despite that fact, despite that very conscious warning, you light up and away you go. And so what's happened is the conscious mind has evaluated that information and compared it to your programming and comes up with a rationalization. Well, you know, Aunt Sally smoked 2 packs a day and she lived till she was 93, and I was going to die anyway. I'd just be old. And, you know, so you see what I mean? So the conscious mind that should be logical and rational comes up with a rationalization. And so So my goal is to take you into hypnosis. I basically bore you to death, just, you know, progressive relaxation. I put you in the chair, put on some woo-woo music, you know, that's specifically designed with the binaural beats to trigger some brainwave activity. And then I, you know, deeply relax you through a progressive relaxation, take you down some of the stairs, and create some imagery in the mind. And basically, I like to describe it this way: the conscious mind as a Labrador retriever, and I throw a stick. And so the conscious mind is off chasing the stick, while I then speak to the subconscious mind through imagery and metaphor. And we do workarounds. We work around your experiences that have caused you. And so the reason why we get stuck in this behavior is, you know, the subconscious mind controls all of the involuntary processes in our body and wants to keep us in homeostasis. So, you know, 98.6 and 60 beats per minute, or whatever is right for you. Runners have a little slower, and, you know, anxious people have a little faster, but whatever that is for you, the subconscious mind brings you back to homeostasis whenever possible. And so similarly, from a behavioral standpoint, if you learn something, you don't have to think about it. So you learn to ride a bike, never have to learn how to ride the bike again, or drive a stick shift, or So the subconscious mind is keeping you in behavioral homeostasis. Now, it's perfect when we're learning an instrument or we're playing a game. You practice, and athletes get in the zone because they've turned it over to their subconscious mind. Not so good when it's behavior that's maladaptive. So you had this trauma and you created this response to the trauma, this coping mechanism, and the trauma is long gone. The person who created it may be dead, but you keep this vigilance against the eventuality of it happening again. And so you may be stuck in this maladaptive behavior as a matter of behavioral homeostasis. So the same thing that allows us to be efficient and only have to learn something once can keep us stuck in not so good behaviors. And so that's kind of what's going on. So I'm looking for events in your life that may have been traumatic and created some maladaptive behavior that you can be stuck in. And oftentimes, it's the human body and the mind is so interesting, right? And so we have an inner protector that can create this diversion, some type of behavior over here, so you don't have to look at that thing that's so ugly and scary over there. And again, that can be long gone, but you created this behavior just in case.
Yeah.
So you say it again.
Yeah, no, these are kind of things that, are great for folks to hear, because I think that now, having used hypnotherapy to help me through anxiety, help me through some other situations like self-limiting beliefs, which I noticed that you have that on your website as well. I think this is one of the things where folks should maybe be thinking about this first before they go into a fitness program, before they go into a weight loss program, before they go into putting in the effort and then having to battle their subconscious all the way.
Totally. Yeah, people come to me. I'm always the last resort. They've tried everything before. And it's okay. I knew you were coming. I was expecting you. And so, it's like, so what happens is that during that programming stage, these little phrases get stuck in our head. Money doesn't grow on trees. Why can't you be more like your sister? Hey, Pudge, come here. So we get stuck in these self-beliefs or self-limiting behavior. Money's the root of all evil. So these things we hear as a kid, we're not even aware of the soundtrack being played in the back of our mind. And so, and self-talk is so critically important. Oh gosh, it's so hard to work out. So, I can never insert, right? I can never, and so you never will. So it's like, I play golf and, it's a prime example. You're standing in the tee box and there's a lake over to the right and you say, don't go into the lake, and because the subconscious mind only heard go into the lake. It doesn't process a negative. So you always want to frame things into positive. Frame things as you want them to be, not as you don't want them to be, right? And so, and we can make ourselves sick. And every cell in our body is listening to our onboard conversation. And so self-talk is super important, and to learning to reframe things. And, we overuse things and they become cliche, affirmations, Stuart Smalley looking in the mirror and documented people like me, but you're going to reject those. You're going to reject the affirmation. But if you learn to frame everything in a positive, positive framework, then you're going to have a different response. We all know of the placebo effect and people get better taking the sugar pill. Well, there's the nocebo effect. And there's been research done that, as many as 75% of medical school students experience the symptoms of the diseases that they're studying. You can make yourself sick. Yeah. Yeah. And look no further than the most recent experience. And we won't go too far into that, but there's mass hypnosis going on right now. People are told that they should be sick, and so they're sick. So at any rate, it's we have far more influence in our world than we believe, but Carolyn Meese was another teacher that showed up for me. The Anatomy of the Spirit was a great book. And, you know, she's there's YouTube videos of her talking on lectures about why we don't heal. You know, we all know that person who gets on Facebook and posts about their diverticulitis. And so why do they do that? Well, it's a thing called secondary gain. They're getting something. So they don't want to get better. They get sympathy, empathy, attention. And so, you know, there's an old saying, before you help someone heal, make sure that they're ready to give up the things that made them sick. And so I'm fairly direct with people, and I'm not for everyone, about one in 500 I'm oil and water with, but for the most part, people find it refreshing, that directness. And so, so hypnotherapy is, well, you know, if you understand how ubiquitous hypnosis is in society, you'd be far less apprehensive about trying hypnosis and hypnotherapy. So what's necessary for a hypnotic trance? And so I was taught three things. Authority. You can see my authority on the wall behind, right? The doctrine of the paradigm, which is, you know, the bits, the story that behind it. Yeah. And you have to feel something. And so, you know, you feel deeply relaxed. Some people, if it doesn't feel like the heroin going into their arm, you know, they don't feel like they were hypnotized. I'm like, listen, you can be hypnotized in driving a car. So right. you may hear everything I say. And the first time you're going to be kind of guarded. So you'll be in trance. I'm observing the physiological changes, the cheeks flatten out, the breathing changes. It's all very apparent to me. So you just have to trust that I'll switch from induction to deepener and then into suggestions following the physiology of your body. But let's look at some other examples that we don't think of as hypnosis. Remember, authority, doctrine, or paradigm, you have to feel something. How about the collar, the white collar or the hat or something, or cloak, and the book, any book. I've read them all, the Bible, the Quran, the Torah, the Bhagavad Gita. That's your doctrine, your paradigm. And you feel something when you go to mosque, temple, or church, and people sing and dance. And so that's hypnotic trance. But here's one that people don't really think about very often, but lab coat and stethoscope, medical school, medical books. Do you feel something when you go to the doctor? Not a good place to have your blood pressure taken, right? You can be excited about good results or scared about bad results, or pissed off that you waited for an hour for a 15-minute appointment. You know, there's all kinds that you're feeling something. So medicine is hypnosis.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, recent example, doctors Fauci and Birx, virology and epidemiology, do people feel something? So it's another example of hypnosis. And so, It's really not something to be fearful of, since we go into it all the time. It's just important that we have an awareness that we may be, you know, that highway hypnosis, you know, rush hour drive time is very expensive to buy ads on the radio, because advertisers know how valuable that time is to be sending messages to people.
Sure. No, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. You know, one of the things I think about with hypnosis and kind of the experience that folks are looking for, because obviously we want to feel something, we want to, you know, go into it having a mission. I think for a lot of people, what they're like is like, okay, I go into hypnosis, right? I get into the state, and we're going to talk about things. We're going to try to explore kind of where life took its path to create this subconscious belief that I'm trying to undo, whatever it may be, and or this behavior habit, whatever. Then they're like, okay, after that, what do I do? How does it work? Do I work on homework where I self-hypnotize daily? Do I, you know, have affirmations? Tell us a little bit about what's the homework in between, and how many sessions do folks typically need?
Yeah. Okay. So severity and duration are the two biggest factors. How long have you had it and how bad is it? Those dictate. I sell 3, 6, and 12 session packages, and I incentivize you to do the work. So the per session breaks down less expensive if you buy the bigger package, but it really depends on, and I don't try and oversell it, but the consultation is going to dictate kind of what that requires. I have people who come to me after 9 years of psychoanalysis. I'm like, didn't you wonder about year three if this was working for you? So, so typically I can help people in three, six or 12 sessions. Although I'm starting a maintenance program because I do have like wound up lawyers who come in once a month, just because it's the only time they can relax. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, people who have events in their life. I had a CHP lieutenant who's testing for captain and he failed the first time. And mm-hmm. so he came in to, you know, help him pass that captain's test.
So
as you have different events in your life, you're coming up for some big thing, a big presentation, people have to fly, you know, so there is benefit to ongoing mindset. So usually, so I audio record the sessions and give access to that recording to the client. And so they can listen to it two or three times in between sessions. The smokers have homework. They have to change brands, change hands, change location, and then between week one and two, and then between week two and three, they have to break them in half and then smoke the last half down to the filters.
So
it burns their lip a little bit. So the smokers definitely have homework. Most people, you know, the goal is to listen to it a couple times, two, three times. There's diminishing returns. You can't listen to it, you know, 10 times every day in between, because at some point you habituate to it and it loses its power. But all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. And so I try and teach people you can get in a quiet, darkened place, sit back and recline, count yourself down the staircase and allow yourself to deeply relax, slow your breathing, and then begin to visualize, you know, conversation with your higher self sitting on a bench under a tree in a park. And what would your higher self tell you? And then just be quiet and listen, or you can script it out and record it and play it back for yourself. So, you know, these are things that people can do in between. We're very suggestible to ourselves. And so if we write down what we want, and if we, you know, you've done it a number of times and you understand that it's just a relaxation process, and that you once you're relaxed and your guard is down, then, you can advance into that zone where the suggestions are going to be taken up by your subconscious mind. And you can write your own little script and record it and play it back to yourself. So, a common misconception is that there's going to be dialogue and stuff. It's usually no dialogue. It's unless I do past life regression, in which case I'm asking people to describe, which I have to take them deeper than normal. Three stages of hypnosis. There's hypnoidal, which is the drive time. Then there's catalepsy, which is more like the dream state, and your hands and feet will go to sleep. And then there's somnambulism, which is characterized by amnesia usually, and that's the deep state. That's the stage stuff where you put them in somnambulism, and they're looking for somnambulists, by the way. They're looking for people in the crowd who are, you know, easily suggestible. But wow. And so I work in catalepsy, so there it's kind of like conscious sedation. There's not a lot of feedback. You're just listening, and I'm making suggestions based on the conversation that we had beforehand. And it's going to be suggestions that that create imagery to help you work around things. It may be a metaphor, it may be not, it may be indirect.
So you're like the guide wall. I mean, and this is kind of what I experienced when I've done hypnosis in the past, is you're the guide. You talk beforehand with the individual about what they want, their goals, etc. And then once you get them into that cataleptic type of state, you're going to guide them towards what might have been this provoking factor. What's the subconscious saying? It's more or less a guide to your subconscious.
Yeah. So that's why the cognitive conversation is really important. And then I really need to elicit and reflectively listen to your experiences. I had a client, she was 77, and she had mast cell disease, Lyme disease, all these things. She couldn't leave the house, her family couldn't visit her. She was trapped. And, I was questioning her. You know, she had a hard life. She grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, married an abusive man, alcohol and abuse and loveless marriage and whatnot. And so, so I'm just trying to break this down. I'm like, you know, obviously those are some key factors, but it wasn't really, I was looking for something more here, something that, you know, kind of caused this. I said, well, what happened first? She said, well, Lyme disease. I said, you know, what was going on in your life then? She goes, well, I was at a ball game. I said, no, I'm not asking you when you think you got bit by a tick. I'm asking you what was going on in your life then. And she hemmed and hawed, and I pressed her and pressed her and pressed her. And she said, finally, she said, I had an affair. I'm like, okay, are you Catholic? I said, did you ask the priest for forgiveness? Did you ask God? I said, well, you know, I'm pretty sure God says if you ask for forgiveness, you're forgiven, but you haven't forgiven yourself. She had locked herself in this prison of guilt, shame, and blame. And she somatized all of that into her body, and it became this. And so when we were able to work through, I've helped others with, you know, other autoimmune conditions where people somatize their emotions into their body, and it becomes illness in some form or fashion. And where the illness is, there's a spiritual aspect. There's also, it's very telling, where are they carrying their illness? And I look no further than my own throat chakra, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very fascinating to start looking through, you know, all of the different areas where things manifest, all of the feelings that go with that. You know, I a lot of times I will find, I mean, it's not even a lot of times, 9 times out of 10, you know, there is some underlying cause, and probably 10 times out of 10, but the 1, 9, 1, there just happened to be something, you know, the one person out of it, we found something consistent. But no, yeah. It is a thing. It's impressive how our subconscious mind is incredibly powerful to create these things. Now, of course, the big takeaway from this podcast that I wanted folks to really get was that you can have a guide to help you to your subconscious mind. Because I think for a lot of us, it's overwhelming to think, how can we tap into our subconscious mind? You see all these books, but the reality of getting in there, I find in my practice and helping folks in this realm, that it's hard to do this. And that's where hypnosis really does come in to help us with it.
Well, that's right. It's, you're too close to see the dots that I'm able to connect. The same thing that made me a great analyst and consultant and lobbyist was I'm a dot connector. I see these connections. And now I always listen, you know, as a lobbyist, I listened in order to, you know, come up with a pithy response, right? And so now I listen reflectively to understand. And people will tell me, and I'll never forget. I got sued by my neighbor one time because I built this fort for my son, and it was in violation of nothing. But watching my attorney in a deposition was one of the most instructive things I've ever done. And so now, he had this very demure demeanor, right? And he, you know, very non-threateningly, was able to elicit all kinds of information from the other parties. And so I take that kind of. He's always in my mind, and I always just kind of, and then what, you know, and so I just kind of draw out of them, and I'll hear something, and I'll pursue that line of questioning, and I'll get to the bottom of things. And that's the biggest thing where people are unable to make Joseph Murphy and the power of the subconscious mind work for them. They're too close to see the events in their life that led to the conditions that they're suffering from now.
It's so true. So I'm guessing that in your book, you're talking about this as well in the Mastermind Master Life book.
Yes. I want people to know about what it really is and the power of it and what you can achieve with it. And so Mastermind Master Life is about, you know, what is it? What's the history? What does science say about it? We started off with a little bit of that. And how can you use it in your life? And so I really, really, it's an attempt to make it approachable for people.
That's huge. Because, you know, I think the biggest factor that so many people have is trying to really weed out, like, okay, how much of this do I need to do? How much effort do I need to put? Obviously, we're all going to seek the least amount of effort to get the most amount of, you know, results. And so there's that whole concept with books and things of that nature.
Oh yeah. So one of the things that led me, you asked earlier about how did I find my way to this? I was looking at coaching, and there was this husband and wife psychologist team that ran a coaching school in Rhode Island. And they told this story about this advertising campaign by this music company. And the advertising campaign was put music back into your life. And there was a typo in the copy, and it said instead puts music back into your life. And so people responded to it amazingly because they thought it was being done for them. Instead of them having to put music in their life, this puts music. And so just that simple little thing. And so that was their introduction to adding to their coaching program hypnosis. And so if you have people understand or believe that you're doing something for them, and it's therefore easier, then their belief system is elevated and they're more likely to engage in it. And so it's not really trickery, it's just the way you frame it. And we talked about how we frame things earlier. And so framing it in a fashion that helps people understand that they'll be helped. Mm-hmm. They don't have to do all the heavy lifting themselves. And even if you view it as kind of magical, which mm-hmm. it can be viewed as, it's kind of magical the way this all works. But it's not as difficult as it may seem. And because most people have struggled trying to make change, Dr. Joe Dispenza will tell you that we have 60 to 70,000 thoughts every day, and 90% of them are the same as they were yesterday. And so that's why it takes illness, a job loss, or a breakup to kind of spur us into change. Otherwise, we fall into that well-worn path, and it's really difficult to get out of for that behavioral homeostasis reason that we spoke about before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, ultimately, one of the reasons I do this podcast is to help people have options and know, like, everything to, one, give hope always, but also that there are options. There are ways that you can work with your health, but there's also ways you can work with your mind, because obviously I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think that my mind and everyone else's mind has the ability to absolutely heal themselves. It's a matter of diving in. And of course, having a good guide. Now, one of the things I'm asked a lot, and I want to get your opinion on this and how you kind of approach this within your own practice as well. Do you do online consults for folks with hypnotherapy?
Oh, sure. I've done hypnosis with people all over the world.
Okay.
And I mean, there are some limitations there in some cases, I'll have someone put their emotions into their arm and make it stiff around and let it go. And kind of hard to do by Zoom, but those are rare occasions. And so I do consultations and sessions by Zoom, and it's just as effective. And I mean, technology is amazing these days. And so geographical limitations are not a problem. And again, I mean, I'm as far away as Australia and New Zealand and England and Canada that I've done sessions with people.
I think a lot of people are, obviously with the pandemic, it kind of opened up new doors for a lot of things virtually, right? And yeah. And some of the old school thoughts of, oh, I need to be in a room with that person, definitely went away. But then also, and this is where I bring in my concept here is quantum healing. You know, we're doing this across, you know, different dimensions. We're doing this across, you know, countries, et cetera. And that's why when folks are always asking me, you know, well, I don't know. I think I need to be present with someone to do hypnotherapy. And I'm like, yes, that's great if that's what you feel, but I've got to go back to the subconscious mind. And is this something that, you know, is a limiting belief?
It's absolutely. Yeah. I love quantum mechanics and the ability to, you know, affect things non-locally, mm-hmm. but I mean, when I was in school, it was before, you know, Zoom and whatnot, and people, they do it over the phone. I like to see, because I want to see, you know, your cheeks will flatten out and your breathing will change. And so I like, this is, you know, about what I need to see is just so this part of your body. And that allows me to visually observe the changes that are going on. And that's really all it is. I bring in the music and I record it, you know, and the whole thing, it's there's really no difference. And that's, I mean, we're creating it in the mind anyway, right? The whole experience is created in the mind. So it doesn't really matter where you are. I can create the conditions virtually or yeah, in person.
Well, that's great. That's great. I'm glad to hear that, you know, your opinion, but also I think it's good for folks to hear it as well, because I think for some of us, we're depending on age range, right? It's all kind of what we've grown up with. Obviously, when I was in school, Zoom was, I've been in, you know, 15 plus years, Zoom was not a thing. And yeah, Now it's becoming more and more of a thing. And as long as someone can operate in this manner, it works. Now, but you are also located, I saw California is your physical location. So and Sacramento area, did I see that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So folks, Norman is in the Sacramento area. Obviously, I'm going to put his website, normanplotkin.com, on my notes at drjcrossnd.com, so you can check that out. And anything else that was mentioned, we had talked about Carolyn Meese as well, and that'll be on there as well for you guys to look at that. Joe Dispenza was dropped in there. So of course, we'll add all those folks as well. So Norman, so if folks are interested right now, and they're going like, oh, maybe this could work for me, what would be one takeaway or one thing you would have them do right now to kind of help them prep for entering into the world of hypnotherapy?
Well, this is not just for hypnotherapy, but for life in general. And it's the Reader's Digest version of The Course in Miracles. Love is your birthright. It resides in your heart center. Its opposite is fear. In any moment, you can choose to come from a place of love or a place of fear. Love gives rise to all positive emotions. Fear gives rise to all negative emotions. And so what I recommend to everyone is to come up with an image, an icon, or a picture that just says love. Keep it in your hip pocket and bring it into your heart space 40 times a day, because we live in a fear-based society and you're beset by fear all around you all the time. And you have to retrain yourself. And so it can be a red rose, a red heart, a peace sign, Jesus, a puppy, a kitten, whatever it is for you, a heart-shaped river rock, whatever picture says to you love, and just start practice, bring that love into your heart space, because, you know, and that doesn't mean you become a doormat or a pushover. I can lovingly say, you know, don't talk to me that way, please. You're making me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Or I can say, shut the hell up. Right. So one's love and one's fear. And so you always have, and Dr. Viktor Frankl, there's a space between action and reaction, between stimulus and response. And in that space lies your power, because you get to choose what kind of human being you're going to show up as. And so if in that space, that 3-second delay between what's said to you and what you, if in that space you just bring love into your heart, you're going to show up as a different human being than if you had been given a fearful response, no matter what the situation is. And, you know, it's like the example of the litter, you know, no one's looking, you throw that piece of paper on the ground, like, you know, pick it up, throw it away next time you're around a trash can. And so, you know what I mean? It's you, we know, be self-aware, bring love into your heart space, always show up with love in your heart. And if you do so, you're going to be more open to receiving this kind of help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree. And I think just this day and age, with all the fear-based stuff that's being pumped into our brains, if we choose to use those outlets, I'm hoping that folks will choose to listen to podcasts like this and other folks' podcasts, and to your work as well, as you get on, as you're with more interviews, and so folks can hear this message. So Norman, thank you so much for coming on the Health Fix podcast and educating us a little bit on what the heck hypnotherapy is all about. And so folks really get a true understanding of what they can be in for and everything. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in,
please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.